Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 1, Like a Virgin. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Season 3. We're going to get into it in just a second. But first, we want to tell you what's happening on the Patreon. Again with this, episode 221 is going to be dropping December 27th. It's Let's Watch a Bunch of Melrose Place Stars and some of their pre-fame commercials. We've got Cheryl Pollock. We've got Greg Evigan, Alyssa Milano, Parker Stevenson from Before We Were Born.
Microcop.
I'm not going to list them all. We will, however, link them all in the show notes if you want to prepare. The only one I'm going to say you have to be off book for is the 1984 Grant Show for Jordache commercial. Extremely important. But all of that and more is going to be a Patreon. So go to againwiththispodcast.com/club to join at any level. Get that. Get all the archives. It's a good time. Sarah, are you prepared for Season 3?
I thought I was, and then I started watching it, so let's get into it.
Oh my God, no kidding. Okay. Let's at least start with the B-plot so we can hold off the pain as long as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Faculty take on new roles at Capeside High, including Jen, bringing it on, pre-bring it on. That was the most shocking part of it, that all of this was like a year before Bring It On.
Yeah. Wild.
It is. Anyway, we start here at Grams's house on the first day of school. Jen and Jack are efficiently plating their complete breakfast of waffles, fruit, and coffee. Jen's hair has done a pretty good job growing out since we saw her last, although she has gone wild with the crimper. I'll say that. You can see it in the visual aids.
And it won't be the last time, nor the only attachment she's using in the next couple of episodes, but huge improvement regardless, I would say.
Grams watches dubiously from the doorway, then pointedly clears her throat. Clip two.
And how long have you two been married?
I'd forgotten how long it takes for the two of them to get to this point of friendship, and it's so fun and so sweet. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I love the whole family. I'll say that.
Yeah, same.
Then Jack and Jen are sitting together at school's some kind of assembly. A trio of bitches with overdone 1999 updos and lingerie-styled outfits you can see in the visual aids. Stop to be bitches. Clip three.
Jen Lindley, how was your summer? Host any gangbangs?
No, Belinda, I could think of a really scathing comeback right now, but I figure that I should show you a little sympathy, seeing as how the lipo didn't take.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of both assholes, actually. It's hard to pick a side.
Yeah. I also, like, are we still at this phase of Jen as a character where she's getting slut-shamed and gives a shit? Like, I kind of thought we were past that, but I guess not.
So. Right. Also, I don't even think she had as much sex last season as Andy did. Like, as far as we saw, there was one night with Chris and then an interrupted threesome that Dawson, like, fireman carried her out of, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
In the whole last season.
Uh-huh.
It's a real Kelly Taylor situation. We're told she's a fun girl, and then, you know, there's no actual evidence on screen. But later, Belinda is screening would-be cheerleaders in a stereotypically rude and fatphobic manner while her minions look appalled and terrified. And Jen, watching with Jack, says, clip four.
Yeah, I know how anthropologists feel when they stumble across a lost tribe whose ancient rituals have remained untouched by time.
Yeah, well, I don't understand why anyone would want to become a cheerleader in the first place.
There's one way to find out.
Jen, what are you doing?
I'm signing up for tryouts.
Let me think about that. Not?
Come on, Belinda. Haven't you ever wondered if I've got what it takes to hold up those pom-poms?
Okay, Lindley. You're on. Tomorrow at 3. Be prompt.
Will do.
I do enjoy that they have this girl showing that she's uncool, at least in this part of the scene, by saying not, which no one was still doing in 1999.
I mean, I think I was, but that only amplifies your point.
No, so, I think you were doing it because it had maybe come back around. It stopped and bringing it back.
That's a generous interpretation for which I thank you. But yeah, I mean, this is all sort of in the service of having Jen make this like Daria-esque comeback. So
right.
I'm just going to go with it because why not?
Right. So then it's the next day. We're at cheerleading tryouts where one poor girl apparently thinks they might be the auditions for Pippin. Clip five.
We don't want to wait for this game to be over. We've got to prove right now.
Hey! Thank you. Next.
I didn't finish my cheer.
Stacy, get a mitt and catch a clue. Yeah. It's your third year trying out for the Minute Girls. Your waistline is thicker. Your hairstyle is even more outdated.
The only reason we let you get this far in the first place is because we wanted to see what lame song you picked to cheer to.
This is a real insult to injury given what has happened in the streaming area, but we'll get to it.
Did you guys notice that was a theme song to Dawson's Creek?
Well, depends on who you ask and where you are or whether it is, but we'll get there. Belinda calls Jen up next, and when Jack asks if she's sure she still wants to do this, she mutters that she's more fired up than ever. She's shown up in jeans and fucking clodhopper, like, Keen boots. Just
oh, God.
So we know she doesn't take this seriously. And when Belinda cracks that they're all looking forward to Jen's performance, given how flexible she is, Jen decides to go Bogosian mode, clip six.
When you see Belinda and her clique in the hallway, you're desperately wishing that you were walking with them, aren't you? And thinking that maybe if you were wearing the right shoes, sporting the latest hairstyle, and using the hottest shade of lip gloss, then maybe they would toss a glance in your direction. Ever wonder why they force their narrow-minded opinions down our throats? Perhaps it's because they have an inkling of what the future has in store for them beyond graduation. Cut to 25 years from now, Belinda McGovern wakes up one morning feeling empty. Maybe it's because her Dartmouth-educated lawyer husband, Tad, has run off to Tijuana with her daughter's roommate from boarding school. Or maybe it's because the twins, Timmy and Tommy, call her by her first name and they're living housekeeper mom. Or maybe it's Belinda's daily 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9:15 showdown with her bottle of Prozac. Her life has become a domestic wasteland. Avoid this fate. Don't let yourself become another cookie-cutter blonde, size 4, rah-rah, cis-bam-boom, mindless, soulless, spineless wench. Screw these auditions, screw cheerleading, and screw Belinda McGovern.
Or don't vote! Who cares? Like, look.
Yeah.
I knew Tammy. Tammy was a friend of mine. You, ma'am, are no Tammy Metzler from Election, in case that was not clear. And yeah, it's a little weird for her to be talking about what's going to happen to these to this cat pack in the future in 25 years, which is, you know, now.
Right.
Good luck, everybody.
Yeah, it's a real like who wins when the bullied becomes the bully. Like, you know, this is just everyone's being an asshole. Kind of. It's hard to be on anyone's side. But
yeah,
This is also, I have to say, very much the, like, it's an extreme example of the sort of sassy magazine attitude. I can say with authority, they were very snotty about cheerleaders too. And some, you know, the cliches go in both directions, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when we catch Jen again some number of days later, she is trudging the halls at school in a way that would certainly never make you think she could play Gwen Verdon someday. She is clomping around in these boots like she's got a load in her pants. Like she is just, they are not doing her any favors with either the direction or the wardrobe because she is not looking like a dancer.
No, she's walking like an earth mover, which we like clocked her for constantly, or I did in the recaps, and I feel a little bad about that now, but I think part of it is these boots each weigh as much as she does.
Yes.
They look like John Fluvog's absolute biggest, thickest, 2-inch sole platforms, so good luck.
Jack catches up to her and comments that she looks like her dog just died. Kids we don't know toss congratulations as she passes them, and it takes Jen forever to explain to Jack that there has been a, and this is a direct quote, unfortunately, slave revolt, oof, in which Belinda's minions deposed Belinda and voted Jen captain of the cheerleading team instead. Clip 7.
That's cool.
That was her flicking her pom-pom at it. I don't believe this would happen, even with the team that is apparently not very serious about winning competitions and also cheers for a shitty football team, but fine. Like, I get that they're trying to do a thing and make sports happen this season, unfortunately, but this is like a bridge too far.
Yeah, and it just doesn't really make any sense to me that these cheerleaders now would be, like, actively antagonizing Jen. Like, I don't know, I went to all girls, so I don't, there's certain like axes of the social order that we didn't have to deal with, and like, you know, jocks and princesses were the same people
right
at my school, but it's like, I mean, if you're actually popular, do you give a shit?
Right,
that wasn't my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you weren't one of them, you just were doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't interact. I don't know, but okay, like, this is where we have to go in order to integrate stupid Mitch and stupid Jack apparently being able to catch a football, but we'll get to it.
We will. I mean, I'll also say, like, for the cheerleaders, if the whole thing is like Jen has made us realize our lives are empty and everything we thought was important isn't, and it's like, in that case, quit cheerleading. Don't, like, become counterculture cheerleaders. It's like so much more hassle.
Yeah. I mean,
not the way they're doing it, but they're still having practices and stuff. Like, just go start a zine if that's what you would rather do.
Yeah. Or like join the basketball team. Like, I don't, there's other ways to get this done. Anyway, doesn't matter.
It sure doesn't. On to the A plot. The new girl in town ruins Dawson's life. I have to stop. I forgot how fucking awful this character is, and I hate every single second she's on screen.
I mean,
I was so mad.
Annoying. She's unbelievable. She talks like them, except when she talks like nobody talks, and
yes.
It's just, and it just keeps going. And then we're asked to believe that this vixen, who is horny for Dawson on the grimy bus, is a high school student. I mean,
right.
Okay, spoilers, I guess, but like, God, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Already.
We do have to dig in, so let's start so we can finish, as I love to say.
Yes, exactly.
We open the storyline on a Cape Cod-bound bus by night. Dawson wakes up from a nap with headphones on so he can't hear the blonde next to him until he takes them off, and she says, clip 8.
Her jewelry on your chin. Saliva from sleep.
Got it! Shut up!
Yeah, like immediately off-putting.
Yes.
Immediately.
And again, is there a virus cloud that people breathe when they, like, get within a certain radius of Capeside that infects them all with thesaurusitis? Because, like, you're drooling. You don't need to also say saliva. We fucking get it. Shut up. Anyway, she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. No.
She adds that he's a very heavy breather. Did he know? He says no, and she drags him for being a poor conversationalist. I hate to take Dawson's side, obviously, but I would not worry too much about the judgment of a girl who would wear a tube top on a bus.
Also, You woke him up.
Right.
Fuck off.
Yeah. He's not drooling on you. Leave him alone. Then she asks what's in his lap. It is a portable DVD player on which he is watching Risky Business. Not that we would know that, because this is the music that replaced old-time rock and roll at the top of the scene, Clip 9. What is this blues hammer shit?
Yeah, not even close.
Oh, anyway, this girl remembers that the characters played by Tom Cruise and Rebecca De Mornay have sex on a train in the movie, and it is sweet and meaningful, even though he's a virgin and she's, as this girl puts it, a battle-scarred hooker who has slept with hundreds of men. Dawson has taken precisely 2 film classes, so he has opinions. Clip 10.
It's more of a modern myth. Joseph Campbell meets Sigmund Freud meets Holden Caulfield. Teenage boy passes into manhood by way of a sexual encounter with a beautiful woman who's essentially a fantasy character of his own creation.
Hey. You're adorable.
We see
Overruled.
What you're doing. We just hate it.
Oh, God. Also, Joseph Campbell. What? Like, none of those references is correct. And if I thought that they were sort of knowingly making Dawson talk out of his ass, okay. But
right.
Given that this same writer's room named a character Holden Caulfield later in this same television program, I believe nothing positive.
She asks Dawson's name. They shake. Another fucking handshake season. He then asks if she's okay. She says her dad taught her when shaking hands to let the other guy release first. It imparts a subtle but powerful advantage in all human intercourse. Ugh, all said in a breathy baby pout, obviously. At the word intercourse, Dawson presumably got a semi, but he meant, is she okay? Because she felt warm, and asks if she has a fever, and she says, clip 11.
Oh, that's just me. My temperature. I run a few degrees hot.
Shut up!
We know what it means! Because they get stupid! Also, No one's dad who ever cared about their daughter's handshake told you that shit.
No.
Trust.
And they didn't say in part if they did.
No.
That's not the right word. No. Anyway. She asks when Dawson's going to tell her about his girlfriend, which takes us into this, clip 12. It sounds so much like she's saying soups before she says suits of armor.
No. And that first verse where it's like, you know, I really wanted the lyric to be my head is up my ass. And now it is canonically AMA.
So this awful. Is Run Like Mad by Jan Arden. It was originally written to be the show's theme song when the show was in development. Apparently, I linked an article about this. It's in the show notes. This song is whatever out of context, but it's not right. I don't love, I don't want to wait, but that's the theme song. This is weird. Yeah. I hate it. And it also means if there's an incongruous last line into I don't want to wait, I have to go to Super Prime Video to get the original Paula Cole song. It's not on Hulu either. I checked. After the credits, we're with Joey at her new job at the marina, gassing up a boat. Her boss, whose name is Rob Logan and is played by Nicholas Lang, takes over and she bitches that he was supposed to be there an hour ago. Rob sneers at her for being nervous about being late for the first day of school, and she just glares before telling him she'll be back after school at 3. Did we, by the way, see Bodhi in season 2 literally at all, like one time?
Yeah, maybe once.
I'm not sure he did.
Given that they catered a whole wedding at which Joey and Dawson got back together, you would think that you would see Bodhi, but you'd have to think again. Also, I mean, and I went back to confirm or try to, like, what exactly happened with your dad? Who is Rob? Why are you yelling at him, but then he's your boss? I don't understand anything that's happening here. I dimly remember something felonious happening with this ass as well. Don't at me. Oh, God. This show.
Yeah, the dad, her dad does not get mentioned.
No.
At all. He's just gone.
Mm.
And so is all the ice house.
Bye, Mike.
Still. So then we're at the Leary house where Dawson has just finished telling Pacey about his bus friend and how he fell asleep again and woke up to an octogenarian Spanish speaker in her place. Let's be a little kind about this unseen woman's hairy upper lip, Dawson. Aging is hard. Speaking of things being hard, clip 13.
You know, usually when I have moments like that, I got to change the sheets afterwards.
I didn't ask.
No. Also, buddy, we know what teenage boys are. No need to specify that. Witter.
Dawson says bus girl wasn't real, so Pacey asks about the one who is, since today's the day Dawson and Joey will have to see each other for the first time since he spent the whole summer in Philadelphia. Dawson and his mushroom hair, and if you don't believe me, go to the visual aids. It is captured there with another beloved TV character.
Oh my God.
No spoilers. Go to the visual aids.
No.
Dawson says it's been over between him and Joey. Pacey thinks it will stop being over when Joey speaks to Dawson, and Dawson shrugs that she won't. Pacey thinks she will have had time to forgive and forget, but clip 14.
You know what? Even if Joey came up to me today and said, I forgive and I forget, I wouldn't. I wouldn't forget that most of the past year has been a hellish nightmare. It's been verbalizing and angsting instead of living. I need to just learn how to exist. Ask questions later.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cape Citians of all ages, new and improved and fresh from Philadelphia, I bring you Dawson Leary.
If you're short on runtime, writers, you can just throw in a montage of, like, B-roll. Don't do this shit. It's what actual bad teen writers do. Take it from one.
Yeah, this one too.
That's just what you do when you don't know how to end a scene. Just put in some words.
Yep.
Pacey's next question suggests that he's been paying more attention to Joey than we realize since he first tried to get with her back in season one. Clip 15.
Let's say you go to school today and Joey comes up and starts apologizing to you. And she does that cute little hair flip thing she does. And then she locks those truly, truly remarkable brown eyes of hers on you. What do you do?
I tell her that it's over. And that it's been over and that we're both better off without each other.
Yeah! That's the energy we want to see you keep all season, because you are.
Yeah, for real. But aren't her eyes... Does she have brown eyes?
I think they're, like, gray.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're brown. Keep talking. I'm going to look that up.
Enter Mitch, announcing that he's on his way to his coaching conference, which is how we learned he's a football coach now. And I very much doubt a conference of high school coaches that could have happened any time over the past 2 to 3 months is instead in the first week of school, but sure. Pacey teases Mitch about the Minutemen's terrible record, and Mitch claims they're going to win this season. And again, to fact check this, there was a whole plot line when Cliff was still around and they were doing Helmets of Glory that he was like a football star, and that was how he knew what his character's motivation was. So all of that is out the door along with Cliff, I guess. We miss you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's in a better place, but still. He's in Felicity at this point.
Anyway, he didn't die.
No, he didn't die.
So we're clear.
When Mitch is about to walk out, Pacey can't believe he doesn't have any final warnings or advice for Dawson before letting him stay alone in the house for the first time. And Mitch duly tells Dawson to keep Pacey out. Har har. At the junior assembly, Pacey continues needling Dawson about seeing Joey until Dawson snits at him to stop. Principal Green, played by the great Oba Babatunde, takes the stage and introduces himself, so bye, bitch, to the lady who tolerated Mr. Peterson for way too long. Don't even remember her name, but she was a woman.
Yeah, good job, Barnstable Educational District. Mm-hmm. We see you.
Principal Green is giving a speech about these kids being like little adults, unlike himself at their age, when Joey and her extremely ill-chosen white bra under a white tank look sneak in late. You can see this in the visual aids, too.
Yeah, it's also, like, not cropped, but, like, it's sort of a handkerchief hem that goes up on the side, and then she's wearing a fairly short khaki mini skirt, like a trouser mini.
Yeah.
She looks great. That's not the issue, but it's just like really out of character, especially when she still has that, like, not Hilfiger, but like Ralph Lauren backpack that she carried very consistently all throughout the previous seasons. Like, she's really showing that much skin at school.
Yeah.
Not that it's not still hot out. It's just, a little, she's a little over glamorized, but I guess that's what the show is going to do with all of them now.
Yeah. Pacey alerts Dawson so insistently that Principal Green calls Pacey out for talking, but then takes an unexpected turn with it, at least at first. Clip 16.
Mr. Wooder, I'd like to applaud you for being the first student I've met at Capeside who behaves like one. Okay. It is my hope that someday you all will act as such. Reclaim your youth. Live, learn, screw up. Keep up the good work, Mr. Wooder. And I'll see you on Saturday for detention.
Okay. Are they supposed to misbehave or not?
Yeah. And since we don't hear about this again, I assume that Pacey stuck his head in the office and was like, you were doing a bit, right? And Mr. Green was like, yep, goodbye.
Speaking of green, you have an update.
Yes. Katie Holmes' eyes are green.
All right.
Not the same. Not the same thing.
Then Dawson does see Joey at the other end of a hallway and freezes, begging Pacey to take him anywhere Joey won't find him. Joey looks up just in time to see Pacey walking Dawson out and looks wounded. And that night, Joey makes it home just in time for dinner and complains to Bessie about how exhausted she is and how much she hates working for that pig Rob. Bessie exposits that it's just until the insurance check comes through. That's how she pronounces it. When Bessie will be able to use that money for a sitter and get another job, like, it's been months, maybe call the company. Is the holdup that there's an active criminal investigation? And if so, could you tell us that? Because we don't know what's happened over the past several months.
And since the establishment appears to be open for business, apparently something got rebuilt after the fire.
Wait, did we see it?
What?
Do we see the business?
The ice house?
Yeah.
Why else would she be working there if it's not open?
Oh, I thought Joey was working at the marina because Bessie has to be home with the kids. That's why she's working a split shift.
Yeah, you know what? You're probably right.
Yeah.
All right.
Bessie only wants to know what happened when Joey saw Dawson again, and Joey lies that it was great. Bessie is so bored with the baby at home that she needs more details, so Joey makes up a story. Clip 17.
Well, he looked at me, and I looked at him, and in that split second, it was like we forgave each other for everything. And then, of course, we talked about it until we were blue in the face, just like old times.
I'm glad, Joe. You two are meant for each other.
No, if I'm sure of anything, that's it.
Get out more, please. Thank you.
Yeah. So we then see the place Pacey took Dawson where Joey wouldn't see him is quite improbably a strip club. Dawson's stripper watching face makes me want to die. You can see it in the visual aids if you dare. Pacey reads from the dancer menu. Strip club patrons, please tell us if that is or was a thing, that Wendy, the dancer, is a second year marine biology student in Woods Hole, and someone was waiting a while to use that one. So congratulations.
It's a wonderful preserve. They have an Osprey cam, if anyone cares.
I mean, now that it's been attached to this exotic dancer, that just sounds filthy, but...
Yeah, I know. I think at the time I was like, oh, and then had to refresh myself on the idea that, oh, right, what's whole? It's really right. A thing.
The server comes to take their order, and while her bad brown flip wig does transform her, we can still tell it's Bus Girl. Dawson can't, because he looks away idiotically while Pacey orders himself a beer and Dawson a glass of milk, and only glances over when Bus Girl is already walking off so he can look at her ass. Pacey then announces that the purpose of Dawson's junior year is to get laid. He met that girl on the bus, didn't he? Dawson says he put her to sleep talking about Joey. I know how she feels. He adds that he doesn't expect to hear from her anytime soon, just in time for Bus Girl herself to return with his milk and Pacey's root beer, and then lean in to comment that he doesn't remember her. Dawson asks if he should, so she jogs his memory by putting her febrile hand on his neck and then pulls her wig off. Not as dramatic as the last wig removal we covered on this podcast. By a country mile.
Mm-mm.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The next day, we rejoin Dawson as Pacey exposits that he has continued to avoid Joey, but also failed to hook up with Bus Girl. Dawson says he did give her his number, but doesn't expect her to call, which is when they walk into the living room and see her sitting there. Dawson tries saying the beginnings of several sentences before Pacey rescues him. They're both wondering how she gained egress. She says she came by to take him up on his offer of a date. Since it was hot out and the door was open, she let herself in. Dawson, beaming idiotically, shrugs that in Capeside, no one locks their doors. All the more reason to judge Mike for being bad at crime. Actually.
Yep. Yeah.
Bus Girl asks what else they don't do in Capeside, which is when Pacey pulls Dawson away to announce he's officially leaving them alone. Dawson can't believe any of this is happening. No one can, bro.
Yeah.
Pacey promises he's in complete control of the situation when Dawson gasps that he's actually not. Pacey says he will be and gets him the keys to Mitch's boat. Dawson says he can't take it out, but when they both lean over to peek at Bus Girl, Pacey says Mitch would understand. Over the marina, Rob walks in on Joey changing clothes. Her yelling at him doesn't stop him coming even further in and getting a Coke out of the cooler right next to her while she holds her shirt closed, then deciding he actually wants a 7-Up and claiming he'll knock next time. Joey says she'll lock the door next time. How are we supposed to feel about this 20-something man preying on a high school girl? Because the score is not sure. Clip 18. It's supposed to belong more to the next scene, which is Dawson and Bus Girl out on the boat. But put those scenes further apart or start the music cue later, because that's weird.
Yeah. Or decide which Joey you're writing for, because this sounds like season one Joey cold decking Eric Balfour with a cafeteria tray. Mm-hmm. I miss that girl, but it's been a minute, so figure it out.
Oh, the writing of Joey is all over the fucking place in this episode. We're going to get to.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense for anyone alive. Never mind her, but we'll get back to it.
Yeah. So on the boat, Dawson's still grinning goofily while Bus Girl sits in the bow, smirking. He asks what she's smiling about. She tells him to take off his shirt. He giggles and she guesses it's too brazen for him. He thinks he's just a little nervous for the same reason she's not. She claims she is nervous. Anything that's worth anything is scary or dangerous in some way. And without fear, there would be no accomplishments and no fun. Dawson gets even more nervous, which unfortunately kicks his usual logorrhea into a higher gear. Clip 19.
A number of questions present themselves.
Fire away.
What's your name? Where you live? Why on earth are you hanging out with me? In short, you know, who are you? Where do you come from?
You said it yourself, Dawson. I'm a fantasy.
of your own creation. I can feel your heart beating.
You can.
It's going a million miles an hour. Slow down.
I'm sorry?
The boat.
Oh.
That's better. You're a virgin, aren't you, Dawson?
What comes before a virgin?
Everything but.
No, that's... He's saying he's not even at everything but yet.
Yeah, I mean, the writing of this is everything but two T's.
Nice.
This is so bad. So bad. Mm-hmm. All of it.
Yeah, she's so tiresome. Like, she's so predictable and so not a person. Like,
in yeah, it no. Mm-hmm.
Whatever. She kisses him as he continues driving the boat and not looking where they're going. And when she starts kissing down his body, he giggles again and asks her to at least tell him her name. And finally, she says he can call her Eve. Clip 20.
Eve. It's a biblical name.
I'll try and live up to it.
What does that even mean?
I don't
Why?
Know. And I guess they couldn't afford to stage an actual crash because then the screen goes white. And when the picture comes back up, we see that Mitch's boat has collided with the dock at the marina, disturbing several lobster traps. Oh, no, the directors need those for all the local color. Joey and Rob come running out to make sure no one's hurt, which is when Joey sees who the captain is. Dawson stammers that he thinks he's okay just before Eve, right behind him, starts cracking up and gasps that crashes are so intense. Joey's stunned and Dawson tries to rescue the moment with introductions. Joey spits that suddenly everything is clear. Rob asks if she knows this moron, so please don't make me like this guy, he's a pedo. And Joey shrugs that she thought she did. And Dawson has to look from her to Eve, the latter, preening annoyingly like she is every time she's on camera.
Uh-huh.
After the commercial, Rob's doing some quick math and telling Dawson fixing the boat's going to cost at least $3,000. Dawson looks out to Eve, kicking her feet in the undoubtedly disgusting, oily marina water. This was so gross to me. I'm not even a boat person. I know this is the grossest water gets because for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He jokes that he should have gone down with the ship. Rob just agrees instead of saying it looked like you were trying to. Dawson walks back out to join Eve. And somehow the least believable part of this scene is the chunky shoes and socks he has on. Like, you were on a boat. Get flip flops or boat shoes. That's literally what they're for.
Yeah.
But anyway, clip 21.
Things could be worse.
That's what they said to King Lear before he lost his mind. His daughter killed herself. Was it the other way around?
That is the most random reference in a show full of random references.
Yeah, what?
What? Eve purrs that no one got hurt and that Dawson will never forget this day. Everyone wants life to go smoothly, but it's the mistakes that keep life interesting. This character type is so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Vanderbeek makes an even more mush-mouth hash of the line, another treacly truism, and I think my sweet tooth's going to start to ache, though to be fair, no one could make that seem natural.
True.
Eve belatedly figures out Dawson's mad at her and disputes his claim that she made him crash the boat. Dawson doesn't think he's ready for any of this, and Eve snaps it after knowing him 48 hours. She can tell his problem is living from the neck up, and when she starts stomping off, he asks her not to go. Clip 22.
A man's character is his fate.
And?
This isn't me. Okay, I don't meet strange girls on buses. I don't drive my father's boat without permission. I mean, look what happens when I do. Unmitigated disaster.
Well, that's too bad. Because this girl just wants to have fun.
Okay, great. We'll never see you again, I hope.
Beat it. Boston's that way. Why are you here?
Right.
Go away.
At the Potter Yard, we join Joey just as she's finished catching Bessie up on the day's events, including that she was lying before when she told Bessie about her wonderful reunion with Dawson. She just wishes he had told her about Eve so Joey wouldn't feel like such a fool. Again, not to defend him, but how could he tell her when A, they're not speaking, because B, the last conversation they had involved Joey basically telling Dawson he's dead to her.
Mm-hmm.
Joey sputters that Eve is everything she's not. Wild, confident, blonde. Bessie remembers when there was another blonde in the picture, and Joey gloats at how well that turned out, which did it. Also gross. Don't make it a competition.
No.
But adds that it's different now, and Bessie pointedly says, yes, it is. And Joey looks like she's got a lot to think about, but I don't know what either of them is referring to. you broke up.
I don't. Is this the completely different writer's team that is writing it, like the paper towel game where like you can't see three folds ahead of you in the story? Like,
yeah.
I mean, she told him to fuck off. Like, it's fine to regret that, but at no point has she reset it so that anyone knows that that happened from last season, or how she might feel about it after not seeing him for 3 months. Like, I don't need the reset because I just work here, but figure out for the character what she's supposed to want. I do not think it would be this.
Yeah.
But all right.
And also, speaking of resetting, like the last time before this episode that we saw Joey and Bessie together, like Bessie was cutting her dead for wearing a wire to get Mike to confess. So, maybe some reference to like, well, we had a rough time too, but we made it through, or like something, you know?
Yeah, was there like a summer webisode that tried to bridge these?
Yeah.
That we forgot about? Because I don't think so.
They were doing those anyway. Then. Yeah.
No, I don't think so either.
At the Leary house, Pacey's dubious about how useful it is for Dawson to search the house for loose change to pay for the boat repair. Dawson says even if he sells his DVD player, he'll be close to $2,000 short. Those things are like $50 now. I looked them up.
Yeah.
So funny. Then the doorbell rings and it's Eve, who comes in and then waits until they get to the living room where Pacey is to hand Dawson an envelope containing nearly $400 from the girls at the club. Dawson is mortified. Pacey states that they will gladly take the tips, but Dawson Gary Cooper Lee refuses. It's the girls' money and his problem. Eve insists and Dawson insists back harder. And as their voices recede, we watch Pacey put on the Ray-Bans Dawson just found in the couch and clip 23. I don't know what that's referring to, because it doesn't sound like the song we heard at the beginning of the episode at all.
No. And having done this and King Lear, now we're going a completely different direction.
We are. So Pacey gets the brilliant idea to attack the problem Tom Cruise style. Maybe Eve's friend could just donate their time. They'll throw a party in the house tonight. Eve and her squished down strapless bra boobs, which you can see in the visual aids, think this is a brilliant idea. We'll make all the money he needs in a few hours. Dawson doesn't want to turn his house into a strip club. And then we cross the streams with a rewrite of a different movie. Clip 24.
Dawson. Teenage boys will come, Dawson. They'll arrive at your house for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up in your driveway, not really sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children. Well, of course, we don't mind if you come in and look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. And they'll pass over that money without even looking at it. For it is money they have and breasts they lack. Oh, yes, Dawson. Teenage boys will come. They most definitely will come. Oh, yeah.
How dare you? You are no James Earl Jones, sir. I love you, but no. And then they go from this to a visual reference of all the cars at the end of Field of Dreams zigzagging through the cornfields, except they're zigzagging up to the Leary house, but via a route that, based on everything we've seen in daylight, means that they are driving on the water. Like, who needed this badly? I love that movie too, but go work on that.
I think they're behind because we see this path like snaking around to the front of the house, which looks out to the water. But still,
got it.
The other thing that we can't see in this shot is that Grams's house is like 10 yards away. Like, it's completely cropped out that she wouldn't come out and be like, what the heck is going on over here.
Yeah. What in the Lord's name are you doing driving on my lawn? Which they absolutely would not do, because she would be known in a small town for
true.
She was not to be fucked with. Like,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think she's like really in other people's business, but I think when the dancers all showed up, she would notice like something with titties is happening next door.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, inside, stripping is occurring with a ratio of about 40 guys per lady. Dawson is being performatively conscience-stricken about it and goes to his room to lie down, which is when he sees Joey's already in there. She comments that it's a rager, but doesn't note or ask why it's such a sausage fest, which, like, even if she didn't come in the front door and see Pacey taking money, like, she would have had to cross the line of guys to get to the ladder.
Uh-huh.
So you'd think she'd be like, what is happening here? But whatever, we don't hear any of that.
There's absolutely no way, even if there's nobody else in the house, there's no way that she, as written up to this point, is in that room. But especially not if she has any inkling that, like, ooh, looks like a rager, like, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe come back another time?
Yeah.
Or don't. You got rid of him. Yeah, you're free. Stick the landing, Potter.
But she doesn't. She guesses she's the last person Dawson wants to see. He says she's never the last person he wants to see. So she joins him on the bed and says, clip 25.
I'm sorry. Not just about today. Everything. You know, about my dad. I was wrong. I mean, in a total moment of adolescent anguish and upset, I lashed out at the one person who cares about me the most and who I care about the most.
You should have called me, Joey. Just written me. You should have contacted me.
I should have done a lot of things. I was, ashamed.
All right, so her dad does come up. We don't find out where he is, though.
Right.
She, and,
yeah, okay, shame tracks, but nothing that she's doing in this scene tracks from that, so.
Yeah.
But we're just going to have to keep going so that it's over.
So Joey asks who Eve is. He says they just met and no, they're not a couple, and he and Joey go on, clip 26.
So did you miss me?
You know I did.
Good. Because I miss you too.
Things aren't the same anymore, Joe.
Doesn't have to be the same, Dawson. It's a new year. Things can be different. And they can be better.
So then she pulls her tank top over her head and just stands there looking at him while he sits on the end of the bed and looks up at her. And that's the act out. And we come out of commercial to Dawson still staring up at Joey in her bra. But when she leans down to kiss him, he stops her and says, "This isn't her." I had written exactly that in my notes before the act out, because she's acting like a pod person, like, or like she's setting him up to be in an embarrassing position when someone bursts in to take a Polaroid or something. Like it's an American Pie.
Yeah. And like the look on Holmes's face is nausea.
Yes.
Not desire.
No.
So I think even the actor was like, asshole does what with her tank top? Like, no.
And just when you think it can't get worse, clip 27.
I can be sexual, Dawson.
No, we talked about this.
No.
Dawson knows she can do the thing that she just said, but tells her they can't do this and holds her hands away from him as she stands there in her bra. And then he puts her shirt in her hands and tells her to put it on. Never speak to this person again. This is it forever. You can no longer have any kind of relationship. It's a wrap.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It does, at least, seem Joey might have resolved never to talk to him again. Clip 28.
Joey, I'm sorry if you're hurt.
Hurt? Why would I be hurt, Dawson? I mean, I hope you're not delusional enough to think this is some embarrassing attempt at getting you back. Besides, sex is all you're about
these
days.
Sex is not all I'm about, Joey. You more than anyone should know that.
Don't blame me for your sexual inexperience, Dawson.
I'm not blaming
you. I never stopped you from being with anyone else.
It was particularly clear when you dumped me twice.
There was plenty of time for you to have all the fun you wanted. It's not my fault if you're still a virgin.
Joey, what happened between us or didn't happen was because we both wanted it that way.
What's wrong? What's so wrong with me?
It's not you. It's us. I can't go through it all again. And you say it'll be different, but it won't be.
You don't know that.
Yes, I do. And so do you. Joey, one more year like last year, and I can promise you there will be no love left between us.
Is there any now?
Yes.
So you love me. You just don't want me.
This is so painful.
Oh my God, count your fucking blessings, go down the ladder, burn it to the ground, and get on with your life.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
He's unfortunately
you are terrible
not.
For each other.
Yes. So Dawson comes down to look at his party where even Jack and Jen are in attendance. I love that detail. Just in time for Pacey to turn the lights on and the music off and announce they raised $3,162. So he's ready to open it to the public. I think the entire island's already there. Eve walks Dawson through the party as he protests that he should probably stay and make sure no one burns the house down. Eve asks why he would avoid her, and he admits it's to stop himself wondering if he's going to sleep with her. She just tells him again to come with her and all secrets will be revealed. But instead, Dawson beckons Pacey away just as he's dancing with one of the ladies in his scandalous Ray-Bans and tells him on the porch that Joey wants him back. Bro, Pacey does not care right now.
No.
Not interested.
Nor should he.
Nor should he. Pacey wearily says it always comes down to this, the Madonna or the Jezebel. Ugh, not you two. Dawson rakes his hands through his hair and describes Joey's proposition. He wanted her as much as ever, but he knew this wasn't the right time for them. And Pacey exhales an exhausted, yeah. Dawson asks Pacey to look out for Joey the next couple of days and make sure she's okay. Like, you've rejected her before. I don't think she's going to do anything.
Yeah.
Pacey refuses, but Dawson insists that Joey needs somebody and he would be doing it as a favor to Dawson. Favor to the entire viewing audience, more like in the long term. Pacey finally agrees. Dawson takes off and finds Eve standing in a little white motorboat that she borrowed from her boss. Dawson had hoped they could stay on dry land, and she's like, if at first you don't succeed. But then someone's bellowing Dawson's name. Mitch, of course, back early from the spurious conference. Eve poses very unnaturally and, you guessed it, annoyingly, with one hand on her hip and the other on her ribs, as you can see in the visual aids, because nothing about this character is not completely studied and contrived and...
And contrived, yeah.
Terrible. She tells Dawson he's one step away from the rest of his life and to get in. Dawson looks from her to Mitch and says he crashed Mitch's boat and wrecked his house. He can't just leave. Eve says he can't fix either of those things tonight, so what's going to change between now and the next morning? Well, having his dad watch him take off will definitely make his punishment worse. He'd be sticking his supposed best friend with the responsibility of explaining this, but Dawson says nothing will change except maybe himself. Eve leans back on a seat in the boat, again, very obviously, and tells him it's his last chance. He says no again. She doesn't know who's the bigger mystery, her or him. That is a tough one since they're both extremely obvious types.
Yeah.
Like, neither of you is a tough nut to crack, actually.
No. Or deep, either.
Or that. Ugh. Over to the Potter property where Pacey uses Dawson's boat to speed up to Joey, who's sitting on the end of her dock. She tearfully threatens to kill him if he gets closer, but he gets up and sits next to her anyway. She guesses Dawson told him, and Pacey's like, what do you think? And Joey thinks she hates them both. They go on, clip 29.
Well, then you're really going to hate me when you hear what I have to say. He did the right thing. The two of you need to be apart right now.
How would you know what I need?
Yeah. Yeah, you know you're probably right. How could I possibly know how hard it is to let somebody go, right? The pain of knowing that even though the two of you are right for each other, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're right for each other right now. What would I know about that, right? How could I possibly know that sometimes it just makes you want to scream, hit somebody, or sit out at the end of a dock and cry?
Of all the people to see me like this, it had to be you.
You know, it's a new year. Who knows? You and I might even become friends.
I'm upset enough as it is.
Come here,
father. The end of that must have been in the previously is like every other episode, because it really like, it all came flooding back as soon as I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the episode. Let's close it up by naming our MVP.
Principal Green? There's not a lot to choose from. Everyone's kind of a butt this week. I don't know.
I'll say Pacey. He at least solved some problems and, you know, started the process of getting us to the ending that we want for season three. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Least valuable player.
Eve.
Yes. Truly no contest. She is just such a cardboard standee of a person. Like, I'm so tired of her already.
She really is. She's like a poor man's Ellie Larder, and we already had a perfectly good rich man's Ellie Larder on the show.
It's true.
Get her back.
The one nice thing I can say about her is that her pixie cut is super cute. I defended Jen's last season at first, but hers is like the real deal. It's adorable in every shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, she's cute. Just her character is exhausting. So,
100 OP.
Next time on Again With This, Andy's back and she's gonna be in trouble. Plus, Jen can't get off the Daria cheerleader ride and Eve is still here. And horny for Dawson and a question mark and then a barf emoji? You'll be horny for an entire sleeve of Tums after you check out our visual aids. That's the important screenshots and GIFs from this and every other episode of the podcast. You'll find those at againwiththispodcast.com and the entire archive of episodes of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com/subscribe. I'm Magical Cornfield Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Modern Myth Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, runs a few degrees hot in temperature. Talk to you next time.
I can be sexual, Dawson. I hate it.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.